Welcome to the Sons of Technology Clubhouse. Ditch your fear at the door, take a risk, and enjoy the ride with your hosts, Joe Marquez and Kyle Anderson.
Welcome, everybody, to another fantastic episode of the podcast by the Sons of Technology. My name is Joe Marquez, currently the Director of Academic Innovation for Q, and we're so excited to be here for you because it's been a minute. It's been a minute since we've recorded an episode, and then it's been a minute since we have released an episode. I think our last episode dropped the first weekend of July, right after 4th of July. But, you know, the summer has gone by so fast that everybody now is thinking about the start of school, right? Everybody now is either going into in-service this coming week, or you may possibly be exiting in-service and starting your first day of school. Kyle, I know you started your first week of school this week. Roland, I know you have your first week of school quite down the ways, right? So that's you still have another vacation that you're going on. But that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about setting the stage, setting the classroom up for success. What do you do in setting that tempo, setting just a fun classroom environment? How do you set up your room to make it be welcoming for your students? And then what are some of the activities you do on the first week? What technologies, what activities, what do you do to get students in the mood to learn? But before we do that, let's go ahead and all introduce ourselves. I've already said my name is Joe Marquez. If you want to follow me on the Twitters, you see my handle right down there at JoeMarquez70. But I'm going to go and pass it on to my partner in innovation, Kyle Anderson. Kyle, tell everybody about yourself.
Hello, everybody. Once again, welcome back. It has been a minute since we have done an episode. I am Kyle Anderson in my new role as a special education instructional facilitator in Las Vegas, Nevada. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Anderson EdTech. My neglected blog, AndersonEdTech.net, is out there. And then we also have a book that you can get a hold of titled To the Edge, Successes and Failures Through Risk-Taking. That is on Amazon. It's on BarnesandNoble.com. It's also available through my publisher, EduMatch Publishing. And with us is somebody who actually recently read my book, totally shameless plug right there. Totally going to throw that out there. But Roland Chidiak is with us as well. So Roland, go ahead and introduce yourself, please.
Right on. Thanks, guys. And I did just read your book and it was fantastic. So I do think people should go out there, grab a copy. You're very accessible. So if they've got comments or questions, it's pretty cool when you've got the author who's actually going to respond to you and engage with you. So I know that about you, Kyle Anderson. So that's good stuff. My name is Roland Chidiak. I am a re-engagement teacher in Canada. I work out of Waterloo Region with the Waterloo Catholic District School Board. And you can find me on Twitter at rchids, which is right there.
There it is.
I love being part of this podcast and I jump on whenever I can. Because I'm in Canada, there's a time difference, right? I'm 3 hours into the future. And so sometimes I've got things going on, I can't make it. And as Joe said, I'm going on vacation a couple of hours. My family and I are going to a cottage a couple of hours away from home. My first day of school is September the 6th, but we do get in earlier. And I'll talk about that as we progress in the podcast. But I'm still in major vacation mode. So I'm going to have to flip a switch here to get in line with you guys and make sure that I can contribute properly today. So thanks for having me.
Well, thank you, Roland. And that's one of the reasons we're having this topic, this discussion today, is because we do have a lot of teachers who are exiting vacation mode and getting into work mode. And how do you get into that groove? Now, again, one more thing before we move on to our conversation, I do have to give a shameless plug. As I said, I am Director of Academic Innovation for Q. Q is the foremost organization on the West Coast of the United States, California, Nevada, Oregon, on EdTech members, EdTech innovators, people that love to get together and just chat about innovation in the classroom. And Q does conferences. So we are having a conference. So if you are in the Northern California area, we are going to be having our Fall Q conference in Stockton, California, October 22nd to 23rd. So definitely head on over to fallq.org and see how you can be a part of this amazing event. I do want you to know that food is included. There is going to be a food truck lunch, your choice of food trucks. You go up and you give them your ticket. You get to order what you need. So that is going to be good. And I know this is going to make Roland and Kyle extremely happy. If you are a member of Q, you get 10% off, not only to this conference, but you also get 10% off to Spring Q when that opens up as well. That's going to be at least a minimum $30 savings on your conferences. And Q membership is only $40. So if you're planning on going to even one conference for Q, it almost pays for itself to be a member of Q. So we wanted to make sure you know that is a member benefit. That is one of the many member benefits that is part of being a Q member. All right. So there's my shameless plug for Fall Q. Definitely go to fallq.org and sign up today. Now, we want to start by setting the stage. Now, Roland, I would love to hear from you, right? Because number one, you've been out of the classroom for a little bit, right? Doing some pretty amazing things. And you still have to make those connections with those students as well. So this is very applicable to you. But you have many, many years as a classroom instructor. Unlike many of our listeners, you live in another country. You live in Canada, right? But that doesn't mean that you can't create community in the same kind of way. So I'd love to hear from you, Roland. How do you set the stage? How do you set the stage of success to turning your classroom or campus into a community?
100%. Thanks. I want to start with, I've only been out of the classroom for 1 year, which means that I've been in the classroom for 21 years. And this business of getting into the classroom and starting to think about setup and preparation for the students in terms of the activities that they're going to engage in, the community building type things you're going to do to kick the school year off and make sure it starts off on the right note. A lot of time is spent there. And I know, like many teachers, you get into your room and it's been cleaned and like all the desks and chairs are in the middle and there's nothing there. And the physical component is not the part that stresses me out. The physical component, I do take care to consider different things, especially IEPs and your class roster or class list. You want to, when it's made available to you, because it's not always available to us when we get into the building, but when it's made available to you, it's important to consider who are the kids in the room and their needs, right? So if you've got kids that that need to get up and move around, then you're going to place them maybe in a particular spot in the room where they can do that without disrupting learning. And so when you consider physical component, where desks go, where tables go, where centers go, it's important. I believe it's vital to consider the learners that are on your list and their needs and making sure that you consider that so that you're setting things up for success. So here in the district that I'm part of, when the school year ends, you're allowed in the school for the next week. And then after that week, we've got these little digital keys. They turn them off. You can't get in the building. So if I wanted to go back to my old school and do something, can't get in unless the custodians let me in or the principal lets me in. Before the school year starts, your key is reactivated 2 weeks before the first day of school. And so typically my routine and my wife's routine, she's a classroom teacher, we would go in on that first day, 2 weeks before, and literally just walk in and kind of start to get a feel for this whole thing again, right? Because I've been out of the building. My mind's not been in teaching the same way it is when you're in the room. So the first day, I would say, is kind of like you start moving things around, you start unpacking things. And then as the week goes on, usually the first week is physical and the second week is about the activities and the cognitive stuff that you're going to get into. And here's where I wrote some things down. So when thinking about your physical component, it's very important to, in my opinion, to have a loose setup so that you have space for your student's voice to come into play. There's nothing worse than having you set up your room and you think it's the bomb. The kids walk in and they're like, we don't have any say in this. Like, I'm sitting here and I'm going to sit here until you decide I get to move. Like, that's all new teacher stuff. I learned quickly that I really need to consider them, which means I can't have an A1 setup ready to go for the whole year. It just doesn't operate that way. I need to have a loose structure in mind so I can start my classroom culture. I can kick things off. but leave space for students' voice so that they tell me what they think will work for them, what they want to do in the room. Because like you said, Joe, it's our classroom, right? I'm the teacher, I'm the facilitator, I'm responsible for certain things, but I consider it a family. We are a family. We are together for 10 months from day one to the last day. We need to operate like a family. That means ups and downs, but it also means negotiation. It means good times and good learning. That brings me to my next point, that my role. You are the teacher. There are certain things, and I'm going to kind of go litigious on you here. In Canada, in Ontario, we have the Education Act. It states certain things about me as a teacher and my responsibilities. I must have order and maintain discipline of my classroom and my students. What that looks like is different for everybody, but there are going to be, for me, there are some non-negotiables. It's not a long list, and I'm sure you guys would agree and other people listening would agree. It's not a buffet. It's not anything goes. There are some non-negotiables with me and who I am as a human and what I value. And I would say to my students, there are non-negotiables for you too. There are certain things you're not going to want me to do to you that you would believe is completely inappropriate. And so there's some of those for me and there's some of those for you. I like to get those out right away. For example, give you a quick example. Nobody leaves our room, without talking to me first. I don't care what's happening unless I've told you. If you're not feeling well, get out of here. Go to the garbage can, go to the bathroom. If somebody sees you bolt out of the room, we're going to know that there's an issue. You're not just being difficult. But if you want to go get something from the Learning Commons / library, or you want to go next door and get a resource that you know is next door because the teachers and I work well together, I need to know. You need to tell me I'm leaving the room because part of my responsibility is to know where you are, right? But there's one non-negotiable. But a negotiable is where do you want to do your work? So here's your task. Do you want to sit on the floor? Do you want to go close to the hallway? Do you want to sit at a computer? Like, these are things that I like to get out right away in the first couple of days because I want success. I want to be successful. I want my kids to be successful. I also, when you start your school year, I try not to put too many things on my walls because I want my student work and I want learning goals and success criteria that come from my work with my students. So I don't always want to be, hey, this is how you're going to do this. No, it's like, here's the curriculum. This is what we're responsible for learning. How should we get there? What are you kids interested in? How can I rope that, again, student voice and choice into what we're going to do? And then that stuff goes on the wall. So I always tell new teachers, all these posters you have and everything, you really should build up to it. You should really have a lot of things on the walls that are co-created so that the students have an investment and they're going to take it seriously. They're going to work at the things that you've created and they're going to learn that way. I don't want to take up too much more time. So the last thing I'll say is that another thing that I learned the hard way is to not compare myself to others. So I'm not a very artistic person, I would say, but I've worked with some fantastic colleagues who will have crazy stuff in their room already set up before the school year starts. And it looks fantastic. And I would always want to mimic that until I became more comfortable and confident as a teacher and realized that's not my style. My style is, let's get this room physically ready for people to come in and inhabit the room. But then the walls and all that other stuff, that's going to come with time. It's going to take time. And I've given myself permission to be okay with that. Not everybody's like that. I realized this one day, halfway through my career, an educational assistant that was assigned to my room, to one of my students, came in to check in on me and introduce herself. She comes in, she introduces herself, she starts looking around the room. And she's doing this, she's looking around the room. And I said, are you looking for something? She goes, the student that's coming in here is on the autism spectrum. He doesn't do well with like bells and whistles everywhere. And she goes, this is going to work perfect for him. And my heart broke. I felt insulted that she was like, because none of my colleagues' rooms were like that. All my colleagues had stuff everywhere. And she's like, Roland, this is what he needs. He needs to come in to a blank slate or else he'll start to spin. I know him. I've worked with him for years. And then I was like, you know what? I got to be good with who I am. This is my style. If a principal said to me, why do you do it like this? I could justify it easily. What I'm doing is not bad. It's just different. So try not to compare yourself to other people. Know what is good pedagogy. Know what is good for students. Think about student voice and choice as you set up, and you'll be okay.
You know, I think what you said about, you know, waiting a little bit to set up your space, like the walls and everything, I think that's right on, because the space itself starts to become static, right? The kids come in, if you have everything all up and you, they look around, they see everything, okay. But after a week or so, it's white noise to them now. They're not looking at the walls for references anymore. They're not looking at the walls anymore. It doesn't even bother them anymore. It's become static, right? So you want to have things that grow, and you add based upon maybe projects your students have done, or they grow based upon the unit that you're on. And so they see the progression on the wall, and you tell them, hey, by the time it gets to the end of the wall, school year's over. It's almost like a race that you can see now as well. So I think that's a really great idea. And then I also would like to add on, if you're talking about setting the stage of your classroom space, you know, start using some of the technology that you have to give information to your students. We all know students can zone out when you're having them work on some stuff, and they're zoning out, and that when they zone out, they may just look around your room. Why not, you know, create like an education squirrel, right? Where they have to look at it, but what they're getting is actual information. So what I used to do, and I actually have it in my home office right over here, I have an LED scrolling sign that scrolls across, and I would change it every week to maybe a new vocab word that we're going to be using. And so, and it shows them how to use it, or a science fact, or I would add it all the way up there, and the kids would be just looking at it, right? And I have like the next test date. So all my kids are in the know, because it just grabbed their attention and it just looked at it and would read it. I took it to the next level when I found a TV refurbisher in town that sold like flat panels, so super cheap. I bought a couple, put them on the sides of my classroom, and then I would stick in a USB stick with like images and slideshows of everything that we're doing. And so it would be like digital signage in the classroom, but on the cheap. It was like $50 because they're refurbished TVs that maybe didn't have sound, but the video worked. That's all I wanted. Right. So there's ways to create this space that's constantly moving and constantly changing. And I call that the non-static space. So if you can figure out ways to do that, even just keeping your projector on and then having a slideshow go through while they're working, that does amazing things as well. Now, Kyle, you're in a different spot because you last year you were jumping around to different classes and you had co-teachers, and then this year you work with lots of individual students. How are you setting the stage of success for not only your students, but the staff that you're working with, and how is your campus setting the stage for you to be successful in your new role?
So that's a really good question, because I don't know if I necessarily have any sort of routine or anything that I'm doing, because it is a new role that is completely different from really anything I've done before. So I was a classroom teacher. Like you mentioned, I was a co-teacher for the last few years, working with different teachers in different subject areas, whatnot. You know, and then I did have my stint as an administrator. So the role I'm in now is kind of like, it's all of that rolled into one, almost, where I don't have a classroom. So I'm not working with classes per se, but if a teacher needs assistance with a student implementing their IEP or strategies to help this student be more successful in their classroom, that's kind of like what my role is going to be. The big focus I've had for this first week here is working with our special program students. So our students that are in programs like life skills, functional life skills, autism, our emotionally disturbed students. So I've been working more with those students, more just getting myself around them so they know who I am. Because if all of a sudden I go into the functional life skills class because there something has gone on in there, there's going to be 8 students in there that if they don't know who I am, that may exasperate the issue that's going on in there. So I've been really trying to get around these students as much as I can this past week, just so they get to know who I am. So And that includes going and doing lunch duty every day, which is something I'm going to do every day anyway, is helping out with those students. But it's as simple also as after lunch is over, rather than saying goodbye to the kids and then the teacher and the aides go back to the classroom, I'm walking back with them or even pushing like the wheelchairs of some of the kids so they know who I am. And so I can just build that relationship with those students. I've been seeing a lot of my students from the past couple of years over the days as well, and just saying hello and just saying, hey, if you need anything, let me know. I'm not necessarily going to be or like able to get to you like I was in the past because now I have so many more students I'm working with, but I'm still available for you. So it's really a lot of that relationship stuff that we've mentioned on here a lot. So now with my space, that's another animal right now. So I don't technically have my own office yet. They're in the process of building out an office space in the school for me. That's going to be, I'm going to be in the area where the assistant principal over discipline is going to be. Not because necessarily I'm going to be dealing with student discipline, but it's important that I'm in the loop on student discipline in regards to students with IEPs, because there are laws about how to discipline a student with an IEP. Doesn't mean you can't discipline a student or suspend them. It just means there's more to it. So, and the rule is that if you suspend a student with an IEP for 10 days or more in a school year, you have to hold a manifestation determination to determine if the behaviors are because of the student's disability. And then you have to make up time, instructional time, if it goes beyond that 10 days. So now with my office being built out with the assistant principal's office over discipline, that's going to have a direct line of communication so that when, if a student is brought into the office, let's say, for example, a fight, that assistant principal is going to do their job, assign the discipline, but rather than it being a surprise down the road, I'll be right there to know, hey, student A just got suspended for 5 days for fighting. I then can open up the line of communication with that student's case manager and inform them, hey, student just got suspended. We need to investigate maybe a behavior intervention plan for the student. And then once those numbers start building up, the manifestation. So, because in the past, and it's nobody's fault necessarily, but in the past, there's been times where, for example, I had a student that I don't have them in class. I never see them. A lot of times this student's not coming to school very much. So the times I am trying to go see them, they're not even at school. All of a sudden I get a notification. This student's been suspended 12 days in the school year. So I'm like, I wish I would have known this sooner. So The idea behind having my office in that office area is to have that to where the communication is open right from the start, rather than it being a gotcha down the road. So I don't technically have that office yet. I'm working out of my coworker's office, who has been doing this role for several years in my school. She is actually out on medical leave for right now. So I don't have that person alongside me to help me learn the new role like I expected. So it's been kind of like a trial by fire, learning the job as I've been going. And I know I've talked to both of you about this, but my biggest thing right now is that my job is not necessarily hard. There's a lot to it. There's a lot of things I have to do, especially when it comes to paperwork and making sure things are legal. I'm not necessarily stressed out. I'm not feeling overwhelmed by any means. My biggest thing right now is that because it's new, it's taken me longer to do stuff that my partner would be able to do within minutes or even seconds. So that's taken me a lot longer because I've never done it before. So my concern with myself right now is that I'm used to being good at my job, and I take pride in being good at my job. And right now I'm not good at my job, and that's bothering me more than anything. So, but it's a learning process, and I know it's not going to be an overnight thing where I'm not going to show up on Monday morning and instantly be amazing at my job. And I'm very fortunate that I do have a great support structure at my school. I've worked there for the last couple of years, so I know everybody for the most part. Whereas if I was in this same role at another school, brand new to that school, I think I'd be a lot more buried if I was at another school. I'm very fortunate that I'm at the same school I was at for the last couple of years. So But again, I know it's a process. I'm going to get better. I'm learning more every day. Things are getting easier for me. It's just one of those deals where right now I'm more bothered by the fact that I'm not good at it and I'm not used to not being good at my job.
And well, I'm glad to hear that you have a really great support structure at your campus. But I also am hoping that our listeners, who a majority are teachers, see that there's all the different roles that are on your campus, all the different things that they are doing in preparation. Rather, you know, because a lot of times as a teacher, you just receive IEPs and put on your desk. You don't know all the intricacies and all the work and all the meetings that went into creating that single document. Right. And so the person who brings them to you, it's not like it's their fault they have so many, but they're trying to inform you. So it's always great to see that story behind that paper that teachers are getting when they go. Now, you know, we talked about community. We talked about setting the stage in the classroom. You know, we talked about the things that you do this first week are kind of the first impressions your students are going to get. And I tell this to teachers all the time. It doesn't matter if this is your first year teaching or 20th year teaching, right? Every year that you start a new school year, that's the first time those kids get to see you. And they deserve the best you that you possibly can be, right? They don't deserve the you that's disgruntled because last year didn't go your way, or they don't deserve you who's disgruntled because you were handed too many IEPs on that. They don't deserve that. They deserve the best you that you possibly can be. So I have to say this, please teachers, self-care is absolutely key to also creating community in your classroom. You don't want to bring any bad vibes into your classroom because our students already do that. They already bring in baggage from home, and our job is to make the classroom be a better place, right? So a great place to learn, a great place to know that their voice should be louder instead of not. So we want to make sure that teachers, that you are taking care of yourself so that the attitude you have going into the classroom is the attitude of, I'm going to change the world. And these students are my start. And so we need to make sure that we are ready, that we have that culture within ourselves to be able to bring that out in the classroom. Now I want to kind of switch gears a little bit and talk about some of maybe your favorite activities to do when the students enter your classroom. Now, I know we're all in different roles than classroom teachers, but what were some of your favorite activities to do with your students that first week of school to build that community, to build that culture, and to kind of give a snapshot or a taste of what it's going to be like to be in your classroom for the year, right? I always hated the advice that I got by a teacher when I was getting my credential that said, you know, you should never smile before October or smile before November. I can't remember the date that they gave, but I'm like, why? I don't understand it. I mean, that doesn't make sense. There's, you know, you can demand things, or you can, you know, just let students realize, hey, you're in it for all the right reasons. So I just wanted to make sure that we had that out there. Now, I want to talk about the activities, though. Here's the activities. What are your favorite things to do? Now, whenever I do activities at the beginning of the year, I have the future of the year in my mind. Like, what technologies do I want to introduce to these students in a fun way that has nothing to do with the content that I'm teaching, but I'm teaching them how to use the tool? What are some things I want to do that kind of give them first grasp of how to use this technology? And I actually used to call this Mr. Miyagi-ing my students, because, you know, go back to the Karate Kid. Mr. Miyagi had Daniel wax the car, and his body learned that muscle motion, right? Or how to paint the fence, and his body learned that. But he wasn't learning karate, he didn't think. And then when Mr. Miyagi says, paint the fence, he was able to block and all this stuff. That's what we're doing. We're showing these students how to play around and be playful and be joyful with these tools, and then say, hey, remember when we played around doing this? Now we're going to actually research and post on this. Like, oh, I see it. It's kind of the same thing. So I call it Mr. Miyagi. So I want to show you one of the things that I like to do, and then I want to hear something from each of you as well. So one of the things that I like to do, that's my Star Wars screen. There we go. Boom. Is I like to do an activity with my students called Who's in the Room, right? So it's like, who are you, right? Who's in the room? And in this, I have an instructions for the students. You're going to pick a slide. You're going to add images of things that you like. So we get to know you. Who are you in this room? And so they would come in and they would add a background. They would add their name. They would add. So I do this with teachers all the time. At the beginning of some of my sessions, I want to get to know the teachers. And so I went and I give them 5 minutes to tell me who's in the room. So this is Anna Maria Perez. She's an amazing teacher out of Cy Fair in Texas. But she added all of her badges and stuff. Now I see that she has passion and she has drive to earn all these badges and share that with individuals, right? And here's another one right here. Mrs. Marchi, right? She didn't add a background, but she added pictures, her family, she loves coffee, she loves her dog, she loves her tennis. Like, there's these things here that I get to know these individuals. So not only do I start to get to know my students, their likes, their dislikes, you know, who they are, their style, but I also get to have other students do that, because the other students would then go through and kind of do a gallery walk of all the different students. And then they would leave comments. Hey, I like Lilo and Stitch too. Hey, I like pirates or something, right? Now you're getting to know your friends, but they're getting to know the tool and they're getting to learn how to use the comment tool and communicate with one another. But they're doing it in a fun and easy way. So that's one of my favorite activities, the activity called Who's in the Room. Of course, over the pandemic and sometimes virtually, we call it Who's in the Zoom. But Who's in the Room is one of my go-to beginning of the year activities, trains them how to use Google Slides, but also it helps me get to know my students on that first day. So what are some of yours, guys? What are some of your favorite first of the year activities?
I didn't know that you were going to do this because my thing is similar, and it's basically what they come into the room. We kind of get, we get comfortable, and then on the whiteboard, I project a Google Slides presentation about myself. This is who Mr. C is. I call myself Mr. C. This is who Mr. C is. And we go through like my family, my favorite foods, leisure activities, what I like to do outside of school, how I see myself as a teacher inside of school. So it's basically who I am. And then I flip it over to them because, again, I call it like Chromebook boot camp, where I'm like, okay, we've got the computer, so you're going to need to log back in. Do you remember your login and your password? No problem. This is what I'm here for. So I get to do quick assessments this whole time because basically they get to copy my presentation and then they can use my presentation as a template for their presentation. Now, here's the really good stuff about it. So I get to see who can log on to the computer like they used to in June, because some of them are like, I don't have a clue, Mr. C. And I'm like, no problem, because I've already prepared. They're logging their password on a card. We give them the card. It's like, it is the best assignment and the worst assignment. It's the best because I'm assessing them the entire time.
Yep.
Whether they're writing or not, whether they're avoiding the writing, whether all they're doing is grabbing photos and videos off the internet. Like, I get to see their work ethic. I get to see where they're comfortable with some very simple stuff. But then there's the boot camp, the tech boot camp. Do they know how to use slides? Now, before the pandemic, this was a little bit trickier because I was seen as the tech guy in the building. I'm the guy that had, I didn't need the computers from the Learning Commons because I had my own. Everything I needed, I had. And so kids were coming to me in grade three from grade two and not having the same, the tech experience that they're going to have when they leave me and go to four. Because that was just my wheelhouse. But that changed with the pandemic because everybody had to get on board to a certain standard, I would say, in my district and around me, so that the kids could use these tools to demonstrate their learning in a digital way. Anyway, I digress. But they would come to me. This is how we would do this. And then at the end of all this, they would get to present it. They would stand up at the front and they would get a clicker and they would get to click through. And I would get to see it all. And I'm taking notes about everything. So not only am I getting to know the student and they're getting to know me, but I'm getting to do a pre-assessment on all kinds of stuff, academic and non-academic, to get to know my learners better. I didn't have a fancy name for it, but that's what I did because it blew their socks off because they weren't used to that. They're not used to having teachers that were doing that pre-pandemic. I did want to say I am a Q member. I did pay my Q membership. So even though I live in Canada, and I've been talking to Joe and Kyle about this, I'm going to be getting my money's worth. So for anybody who's interested, look into it. There are things, there are benefits to membership that, you know, I'm not going to go to Fall Q. It's just not going to happen. I'm going to be at school. I'm not going to pay to fly to Stockdale to participate, but there are digital learning opportunities, and there's other ways to get involved with Q to help make it a better place for the members and to get some really good PD. So I wanted to throw that in there before I flip it over to Kyle.
Thanks. I'll Venmo you the money I owe you for saying that after we're done here.
All you got to do is pay for my membership and I'm good, because remember, I'm in Canada, so it's probably going to be double. But I'm not complaining. It's a fact.
Well, you'll have to take advantage of the fact that you get the 10% discount for Spring Q instead. So start saving. I'd say start saving your pennies, but you don't have pennies in Canada anymore. So you're going to have to start saving your loonies and toonies, so you can join us at Spring Q, because it's still snowy usually in mid-March in southern Ontario. So it'd be a good time to get to Palm Springs.
Oh, yeah.
Instead. So, but not sponsored by Q, but Joe makes a couple bucks here and there. Not just here, just joking. So, going back now to when I was in the classroom on my own, I had some different activities, and then depending on my co-teacher, we did some similar stuff too. Some co-teachers were kind of already set in their ways where I almost felt like I was an assistant sometimes in a co-taught classroom, but then there was other times where I felt like an equal, and that was something that I felt like with my co-teacher from the last couple of years. But something we did that was always a good time, and it was something that I did in the years before as well, was the first day scavenger hunt, where have a paper with, usually it's about 20 questions of just random stuff. You know, find a person who is left-handed. Find a person that has blue eyes. Find a person that was born outside of the United States, or, you know, something of that nature. So just questions along those lines. And there's like 20 of them. And what it did was it got kids up and moving around to meet their classmates. And I'm sure this is not groundbreaking by any means. I'm sure there are tons of teachers out there that do this. And the reason why is because it's fun and it works. You know, it gets people interacting with one another. And to me, that's even more important now, because I mean, student interaction with one another was already kind of going downhill prior to the pandemic anyway, where that's the one thing that technology and phone culture has really done is it's destroyed person-to-person interactions, in my opinion. So where you just, like, you go to a restaurant and you will see kids and adults alike, it does not discriminate, where there'll be six people sitting at a table and not a word is being spoken, and there are six people just sitting there on their phones and not interacting whatsoever. And, you know, sometimes it's like, well, they're interacting with each other in another way, but it's like, just that person-to-person interaction is just not there anymore. So it helps with that. But also, I always did it myself. I always took the paper and walked around as well myself, because not only was it fun to get to know students that were left-handed, blue eyes, born in another country, whatever it may be, but it helped me to learn their names, which in the beginning of the year, when you have anywhere from 150 to 200 new students, learning names is tough.
Yeah.
And if you start seeing like faces and names together, it helps that process out. Now, the last couple of years, especially because they were technically my classroom, they were a co-teacher's classroom, and I was in there as the co-teacher, it took me over a month to learn names, because I'm not technically the lead teacher in that room, so I'm not doing the interacting as much, but also because on a block schedule, I'm only seeing the kids every other day. So not seeing him as often really made that tough as well. Well, another thing that we would do that not as many students bought into it, because we didn't obviously assign a grade to this. So And like a lot of students and, well, even adults, even now, where if there's no grade attached to it, are you really going to do it kind of deal? So, and that's a conversation for another day. But we would use the program that is formerly known as Flipgrid. It is now known as Flip, which if you did not know that, yes, Flipgrid is now Flip. It's the same product. It's the same platform. Just the website to get to it now is, I believe it's just flip.com, not flipgrid.com anymore. But if you type in Flipgrid, it'll still get you where you need to go. Yep. But I would put out a topic on Flipgrid as a thing to kill two birds with one stone. One, because we wanted to use Flipgrid throughout the year, it was a way for students to interact with the program if they never had before and get to know how to use it. But at the same time, it was also a way to introduce themselves. Again, just another one of those things of seeing faces and names together to try to get to know a student. And usually what I would do is in the topic, the student had to say their name, who they were. And then sometimes I would have them say what school they went to the previous year. And then I would give some options for another question, kind of like a get to know me kind of question in there. So like, what's your favorite sports team, or who's your favorite musical artist? What do you like to do in your free time? Things of that nature. So just something like a 30-second to 1-minute kind of video deal. And again, not a lot of kids did it because, again, there was no grade for it. And, you know, a lot of people just don't want to do stuff if there's nothing attached to it like that. So, but that's just another thing that you can do as well. And in fact, I have, I'd have to look and see if it's on Flipgrid still, but I posted that activity, I think it's about 3-4 years ago, to the Flipgrid library where you can search for stuff. And it got, at one point, it was like over 50,000 like shares, like where people like went to it, grabbed it, and then like copied it and made it their own kind of deal. It was one that it really took off in the Flipgrid library. So like, I'm sure it's still probably there. I don't know what the numbers would be at this point, but yeah, that was just something. I made it and posted in that library and the thing just took off and I had no idea. And then one day somebody from Flipgrid posted it to the Flipgrid Twitter. It's like, hey, check out this topic from Kyle Anderson. I'm like, holy cow, look at this thing. It's blowing up. And it was just something that I didn't intend for it to blow up. I just kind of did it and it did. It went viral, as the kids like to say.
Well, it was, I mean, it's because it's the beginning of the year and it's a great topic and it's a great introduction for teachers if they've never used Flipgrid before, because it's all done, it's all ready to go. So I think that's why it took off. Plus the name Kyle Anderson was on it. So why would you not check something out from that guy? I loved what you were talking about, Kyle, about getting kids up and moving, right? And that reminded me of one of the very first activities I did content-wise in my classroom was about position and directions, because we were talking about motion and with forces, and they need to know that kind of stuff. And one of the terms that they always got stuck off on was reference point. They couldn't remember what reference point meant. And so it's a place that you refer to if you lose your directions. It's a reference point, like a landmark, or it's a reference point. So what we did is we would actually do, using Google Forms, I created a scavenger hunt. And every single direction they got started at the reference point. And so from this reference point, they'd see head south and walk 100 paces and look to the building to the right. Go into the building and ask the lady at the desk what her name is and what she does. And it also helped me I let the kids get to know a lot of our support staff around our campus, you know, and they wouldn't be able to move on to the next scavenger hunt item until they typed in the correct code that the secretary at the office would give them once they were done interviewing her, and they'd get to move on to the next item. And so we just did the scavenger hunt thing. They're moving. Everybody's walking around the campus. They're using their digital compass that they've never used before. And they're like, "What? How is it moving when I'm moving?" They'd never seen a compass before, and then they had to learn, you know, their directions and that kind of stuff. So it was a really great activity. Gets them out, but gets them to start seeing their phones, their personal devices, as more than an entertainment tool. They can see that it actually has functionality within. Within other contexts. So that's one of my favorite things that I liked having my students do that first week of school.
Hey, can I add, I know we're talking about the first week, but I want to throw this out there because this is something I did and I thought I did very well when I was in the classroom. the first week is great. It can be made even better when and if in the spring you spend time with the kids that are going to be coming your way in the fall. And so a lot of the time what I would do, this is pre-pandemic when we were in the building and everybody was free to go, come and go as they please, I would go visit those classrooms. And on recess duty, I would make sure to involve those grade twos coming into grade three next year, not knowing who was coming to my room, but to build that relationship with them, to get them to start to see who I am, how I operate. And I know that before I left the classroom, I was, and before like COVID, it was paying dividends for me to do that because the kids were like, we already know you, Mr. C. Like they'd come in, they're like, I was hoping you'd be my teacher. And I'm like, awesome, let's get started. I already know your name. I know this and I know that. And it's like, so I know we're talking about the first couple of weeks, but once you get rolling, start thinking about next year's first couple of weeks in what you do at the end of a school year. Invite those kids to your class, get them to see what you're about, what the room looks like, so that when they do come in, they know it's an anxious time for everybody. And for me, I dislike the start of school every year, or I used to until I got into my new role, which is different. I'm not a big fan of the anxiety and the stress that comes with starting a new school year. So I like to lighten the load a little bit and get to know these kids and get a feel for all of them so that when I do get my class list, I'd be like, oh yeah, okay. These are familiar names. I already know a little bit about them. They've been in my room. I've been in their room. And so this business of like really getting to know you and not knowing you at all goes from, you don't need to do that with all 25 kids. Now you're only doing it with 7 or 8 because you know the rest of them. So this is something to consider. Put it in the back of your mind after you get things under control and you're moving through the school year, things are running nicely. Start thinking about those first 2-3 weeks again when you hit the spring and start building relationships and have the kids work collaboratively together. Like I think now that we're coming out of COVID, so to speak, we can start getting people together again. And so maximize those practices, maximize that time, thinking about the next school year.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, going for all of that, you know, that's, I like that idea. I mean, getting those students kind of primed for you, like getting to know who you are before the beginning of that school year. I think that's a fantastic idea. But I think what also needs to happen at the beginning of the school year is well, our trademark, ditch that fear, right? Try something new right off the bat. Try something new because you'll, number one, nothing is ever as hard as that first time, right? That'll help you get some of the kinks out. But also it'll let you gauge, is this something I even want to go further down? Because do my kids resonate with it? Or are they bored with it? Or did they not appreciate? Like, because if it's not something that's resonating with your current group of students, then you should try to find something else, right? That's why you should always be looking at new tools. Like if you've never used Flipgrid before, right? Kyle has a fantastic starting activity for you. You go in there and use it and boom, you get to learn how to use it. Your kids get to use it. But try something else. I want to show you this just really quick because I just came across it the other day and I've played with it a little bit, but I have not yet gone full in with what this is. But it is, imagine if quizzes and Canva allowed you to make video games without any coding, basically. And so this is called Breshna.io. All of these games lets you create these games using kind of the same template as a Canva or a Quizzes. So like if you wanted to play you make education games out of these. You have the students come up with the questions and then the right answers, and then they pass them off to other students and they could ask those questions, right? But could you imagine if the questions were about somebody, a get to know you game about yourself? You go around like Kyle did, introduce yourself to people. This is my name. This is where I was born. This is who I am. And then you have a students go in and make games off those questions and see if you can remember who those people were. Right? Couldn't that be a really fun way to do that? And like I said, when you click on it, the editor for this looks very similar to a Quizzes. And then it's so easy to change the background, as easy as what it looks like on Canva. I mean, the way they did this, I thought it was pretty easy, pretty neat. And this is where you add your levels and games. It's pretty cool and it's free. So, you know, again, if you wanted to try something new that you've never done before, you just go in there and have your kid make an about me, about themselves. So that's the one that I wanted to showcase right there, Breshna.io. But also one last one before I have the rest of the group give their final say is whiteboard.fi. I love whiteboard.fi. It's an easy way to create a whiteboard class without needing any sign in, right? All you would do is click on the button that says new class. You type in your name as the teacher, and then just hit create new class. And in a moment's notice, you have an entire whiteboard that you can then just give students the URL to. And then you can ask them questions and they can model it for you. One of my favorite things to do is draw your favorite emoji. I get to see everybody draw and I say, please, no poop. No poop emojis, right? But it gets them to learn how to use their mouse to draw, or if they have a touch screen to draw. Or I say, I want you to draw a circle. And then I'll grab one of the circles and pass that exact circle out to everybody. Okay, now draw a nose on the circle. And then I'll pick one kid who drew a nose and push that out to everybody. So everybody's building a face, but everybody gets to add a little bit to it. I love doing that activity as well. And then we go into it with modeling and math and all that stuff. But that is another cool one. That is whiteboard.fi. You can see up here, it says it's a Kahoot company, because once they came out, Kahoot liked them and ended up purchasing them. I don't know if they've rolled it in to anything Kahoot has done game-wise, but it is owned by Kahoot. All right. So there's my final say. Those are a couple things that I would recommend you try, see how you can incorporate them. And the best way to do that is at the beginning of the year. So Roland or Kyle, would you like to talk about maybe what, you know, some last comments or a last final tool they should try this coming school year?
So while you were presenting your different stuff here, I did go into Flip and find the thing that I created a few years ago. And I was exaggerating on the number of times it was shared or downloaded or whatever. I think in my mind, I was thinking more of the amount of time that was spent recording after it was shared out to others. When I said the 50,000, it's been shared about 8,300 times, but the amount of time that my topic has been used for recordings is equivalent to 1 year and 1 month that's in there. So that is, to me, is still mind-boggling. And then when I was searching for it too, I found my exact same thing, not even like that. They didn't change the GIF or the wording or anything. They just stuck their name on it and then posted it in there as their own topic in Flip as well. So it's been recreated, repurposed, and, well, dare I say, plagiarized a handful of times, which whatever, it's not a big deal. I don't care. I just, it was something I created and it turned out to be really good, I guess. So, but I will stick a link to that in the show notes if you would like to see it and then use it yourself if you are interested in using Flip. And you mentioned Kahoot as well. Another thing I totally forgot that I did with my co-teachers last few years was a get to know your teacher Kahoot, where had some questions in there about some things and then had them guess what the answers were to it. And then we also kind of rolled into like a two truths and a lie kind of deal as well, where about the teachers, and then we would have the students do it. So there's all sorts of fun stuff that you can do. But outside of like things to do with your class or pieces of tech that you can use to do some of these things, this one's more like on a personal level that it was something I realized I hadn't done in several years, because I was, before I went back to work, I was in my closet looking at the clothes hanging in my closet going, you know what? All of this stuff in here is at least 3 years old. I have not purchased anything new to wear to work in over 3 years, partly because of the pandemic. And I was at home for about a year and a half of that. And right now I am wearing a Detroit Tigers t-shirt with a cartoonish tiger from the 1980s on it. This is what I would wear while I was doing online teaching, something like this. And I didn't need new clothes. Well, and then I'm also one of those people that I just don't like going shopping for new clothes. And I have a hard time coughing up the money for new clothes because it's like, man, that's so expensive. Why do I have to spend that much on clothes? Blah, blah, blah. But then I got thinking about it. I'm like, I will drop $80 on a hooded sweatshirt, you know, if I really like it, or I will go and buy, you know, an Under Armour t-shirt to go work out in or something like that and not even blink at the fact it's $30. Why am I blinking at the fact that a new pair of jeans or something is like $80, or, you know, a new button-up shirt I can wear to school is $75 or whatever. So, but to solve all that, because I don't like going to stores to do that, I actually signed up for Stitch Fix. So if you've never heard of Stitch Fix, it's kind of a mail order clothing company where you kind of give them some ideas on your style and your sizes, and then they have this quote-unquote personal shopper stylist pick some things out for you, and then you can approve or deny the stuff. They send it to you. You have the chance to try it on. If you like it, you keep it. If you don't, you send it back. And I tried the Stitch Fix, and I did the Amazon version of Stitch Fix as well. I'm drawing a blank on what the exact name of it is right now.
Wardrobe, Amazon Wardrobe.
Something like that, yep. I love my Stitch Fix stuff, and so once a month now, they're going to send me stuff unless I skip the things. The Amazon one, it was okay. I sent back most of what they sent me. But just kind of taking care of myself and realizing, especially after my wife told me, you deserve to buy some new stuff, you know, because you haven't in a long time. So, and of course, I get the stuff, and then I have my wife approve of them or not because I don't have the greatest sense of style. But it also sent me stuff I typically wouldn't have even tried on, too. So like one of the things I got was a pair of Levi jeans that were in a cut that I'd have never tried on slim fit.
Skinny once. Jeans, yep.
They're not even the skinny ones. It's like slim. So they're not like they don't look ridiculous on me. I think I would look ridiculous in skinny things, I think. But the slim fit ones, it wasn't bad, and I kept them. So now I'm having a wardrobe refresh for the new year as well.
Awesome. Awesome. It's always good to walk on campus with a brand new suit or, you know, outfit, right?
So there's almost a swagger when you have something on that you like and you look good in or something like that. And I'm not like a fashionista by any means, but yeah, just wearing some new clothes this week, I kind of felt like I had this swagger I haven't had in a long time. So I feel really good about myself.
I see a braided beard in your future, my friend.
Oh, the beard. My barber even said to me yesterday, he's shaving my head, and he goes, man, your beard is getting long. It's looking good. I go, it's not Swedish death metal long yet, but I don't know how you describe it. He goes, how about American metal, like Lamb of God style? I'm like, I can get behind that one. So, yes, the beard is getting long. So I am able to tie it up. Because when I go to the pool, I don't like going underwater and having to basically come flying up in my eyes. So now I actually have a ponytail holder. I tie it up so it doesn't fly up my eyes when I'm in the pool.
Well, that is cool, my friend. That is cool. So Roland, are you going to be growing your beard out as long as Kyle for the new school year? I mean, you have a couple weeks left before you have to start.
That's the plan. I'm working back to Kyle level. I was once there, and then COVID and that mask just didn't work for me, so I had to cut the beard. But it's on its way back for sure. And I couldn't stop laughing at the way, you know, you'd flip to me, and then Kyle would add something, and you'd have to flip back, and it was like, is this anyway? I appreciate what Kyle's saying about the wardrobe. It's important. Everybody does it. Nobody really talks about it. So I'm glad that Kyle raised that point. I do want to say two things. Number one, I'll give you guys a link to a site that I think would be helpful, and then one of you can post that up with this. But it's from Common Sense Education. It's a website, and they got like the best tools for back to school. And so it's like, you know, if you're looking for ways to support yourself around technology, instructional supports, organizational tools, even social networks. This is a site with a bunch of really cool sites that you can look into. If you're interested in going down that road, thinking about how do I want to stay a little bit more organized this year, there are some digital tools that may, you know, float your boat. So check that out. But also I wanted to say it's going to be very important to maintain your mental health and keep it in a positive state. There is no shortage of work to do as a teacher, okay? Like it doesn't stop. You could do it 24 hours a day, every single day. So knowing that, take care of yourself. Unplug from the digital, unplug from the classroom. Get out and get moving, get walking, go for a walk in the forest, hang out with your buddies at the coffee shop. you got to find ways to refresh yourself and to keep yourself feeling good about who you are. We've all done it. I know we have. Teachers are professionals. They love what they do. They love their kids. And I'm sure every teacher has gone through a time where they focus solely on their work. But when you do that, you lose a little bit of yourself. And then that could get dangerous. So you don't want to do that. You want to stay as balanced as you can. Find the time to refresh and to step away from your work so that when you come back to it, you're re-energized, you're feeling really good, and you got the gas to do it. So that's my suggestion. Thanks, guys.
No, I love that a lot. Self-care, just making sure you walk into the classroom with a great mindset to teach those kids is absolutely, absolutely important. And I want teachers to remember that right now. Right? I've always said teaching is not a job. Teaching is a calling, right? No, nobody ever gets into education for the pay, right? They get into education because they have a pull to make a difference, and they feel that being a teacher will do that. And I agree with that 100%. But we can get burned out, right? We can come in not charged, right? We just have to do our best that the person we place in front of our kids every day is the best us that we can be. What can you do to be the best you that you can be for your students? And I want to end the podcast by saying this. I saw this kind of quote yesterday, and it really resonated with me. And I think it should resonate with you educators starting school. And the quote is, you haven't met all the people that'll love you yet. You haven't met all the people that are going to resonate with you, that are going to love your teaching, that are going to call you their favorite teacher, that you're going to make a difference for. You haven't met all those people yet. And every single year is your chance to meet some of them. Every single year, those individuals who were just thoughts in your head will become real people. Those people are your students, right? And that happens every year. So every year you have a chance to make a difference and to change the mindset of what students think schooling is. How are you changing that? And last thing, and I always said that was the last thing, dig deep and think back to when you were in school and those teachers you didn't want to be in, those classrooms you didn't want to be in, those activities you didn't want to do. Think back to when you were in class and be the teacher who you wanted to be in that classroom with, not the teacher you wanted to fall asleep through or run away from. Who can you be, right? So that's, and I think that's how you're going to be the best you that you can be. And lastly, a great teacher is not a perfect teacher. A great teacher is just someone who tries new things for the benefit of their students. So go out there, be a great teacher by trying new things and creating an amazing experience for your kids this year. So from the Sons of Technology, we hope you had a great first week, going into a great first week, or going into a great pre-service. Wherever you are on that calendar, we wish you the best on Monday, and we hope that you have a wonderful, wonderful week.